Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, is a method of extracting natural gas out of shale rock in the ground. It's been in development for several decades, but only recently has become technologically feasible. Fracking fueled the oil boom in North Dakota and has boosted U.S. oil output to a 25-year high and pushed the country closer to energy independence. But fracking has also created fears and worries over water contamination and environmental destruction. Fracking is one of those controversial subjects that can lead to shouting matches. But over the past year, the Center of the American West at the University of Colorado has led civil and thoughtful conversations on hydraulic fracturing in an ongoing lecture series called Fracking Sense. Dr. Patty Limerick is the faculty director and chair of the board of the Center of the American West, and she moderates that series. She's in Brookings at South Dakota State University today for this evening's Harding Lecture. Her lecture is titled, A Fractured Society Confronts Hydraulic Fracturing, How Historical Perspective Makes a Current Dilemma Both Better and Worse. And she's with us on the line from SDSU. And Dr. Limerick, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back in South Dakota, where I had my very, very, very first speaking invitation in 1972. So it's a huge pleasure to be here again.
And I imagine you weren't talking about fracking, though.
I sure wasn't. I was talking about aging in American society, which I was still a college student, and that's a whole other story, but a wonderful person in Madison, Jerry Lang, who taught at General Beadle State College, invited me to visit, and I got plunked here in eastern South Dakota for a full week, and I met many wonderful people, and it just changed me. So I'm really happy to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you here. Now, I'm wondering how you and the Center of the American West got involved in the fracking debate.
Good question. Years ago, in 2003, the Center of the American West did a report called What Every Westerner Should Know About Energy. And we put everything we had into being fair and neutral and complicated in our point of view. So that report did very well in the world, and a lot of people from many different perspectives and positions thought it was a report worth reading. That one outcome of that was that I got invited to speak at the Colorado Oil and Gas Association Rocky Mountain Strategy Conference right after that report came out. I have attended those meetings for years. I have been in the company of environmental groups and community groups, so for quite a long time I've been trying to help out in the regional conversation on energy issues. Then the National Science Foundation created a new initiative, the Sustainability Research Networks, 2 years ago. A bunch of scientists and engineers on my campus put in a proposal on natural gas development and hydraulic fracturing. National Science Foundation requires there to be, besides the scientists, a group affiliated with a project that specializes in communication and discussion and public outreach. So I hope I did that efficiently, but yeah. Now we are part of a $12 million five-year grant on maximizing the benefits of natural gas production and minimizing the negative impacts of it.
Now, you mentioned being neutral. I'm wondering if it's possible when considering fracking to be neutral, which involves debates over the environment, economy, and energy. This is a debate that's often fueled by emotions on both sides. How right. difficult is it to have that neutral discussion?
I am never overconfident because that old phrase, pride goeth before a fall, is true. So I will never say, oh, it's really pretty easy to preside over those conversations. It's not particularly easy, but it's workable. And my basic conviction is that American society at this moment lacks umpires and referees. And if you think what it would be like to play football without a referee on the field, you can have some sense of why it's not working out for us as a society to be so short on umpires and referees. So at any fracking sense event, I am responsible. I am the one who sits in front of the group. When I introduce the speaker, I don't go sit in the audience with my back to the audience. I sit next to the speaker. I watch the audience. If I see discontent and trouble perkling up, I try to respond to that before it becomes explosive. I encourage people to express their disagreement and dismay, but I ask them to do it with what we call respiratory protest. If at a Center of the American West event you were encouraged to sigh with exasperation, to snort with skepticism and cynicism. You can even hiss the speaker if you want, but you have to keep the noise level at a stage where it does not interrupt your neighbor's ability to hear the speaker. So we have some customs that are a little bit eccentric and unusual, but they work really well. We have written questions so that people are not tempted to go off into personal denunciations of the speaker. They have to write the question. Questions get picked up. I put them together. And so we succeed. I believe we get every single person's question acknowledged and presented to the speaker. But we also do that without any wasting any time in personal attacks or strong emotion that doesn't clarify the subject.
Now, imagine that in talking about hydraulic fracturing or fracking, that first you have to agree on the definition of what you're talking about?
That's a good point. So many of the discussions derail because one group of people, often those in industry, when they say hydraulic fracturing, they have the intention of referring to a process that occurs often very far beneath the surface of the earth and involves the injection of fluids into shale rock and the fracturing of that rock and the release of the gas trapped in that rock. That's what they want to say when they say hydraulic fracturing. To many others in American society who are not practitioners in the field, fracking has become the universal umbrella word for drilling, for maintaining production at a well, of having storage facilities on the surface of the earth. It's just the whole kit and caboodle of oil or gas production. And yet some people will just refer to that as fracking and say that they oppose fracking. So it's hard to have a productive conversation when different participants are using such different meanings. They're using the same term, but they're not using it in similar ways at all. So it seems like sometimes you can actually clear the air just with a moment of saying, let's say exactly what we mean. And if we were talking about, like, for instance, along the Front Range of Colorado in September, we had big floods, and that had an effect on some of the surface storage tanks. But that's not a place where fracking is occurring, and yet people would say the floods are, the effect is made worse by fracking. No, that's not what you meant to say. So just clearing up that term so that we can speak precisely about what really is a concern, the possible leakage of either gas into the air or into or various compounds and chemicals into water really close to the surface or on the surface, those are legitimate concerns. Those are pretty different from the actual technical process of fracturing the rock far beneath the surface.
Now, in coming up with those definitions, does this help reach what you describe as a more precise aim when talking about the potential dangers of this process?
Right. I think that's a key way of improving the conversation is to take what are emotionally and culturally powerful notions that something disturbing is happening beneath the surface of the earth, and that will somehow or other reach up to the world of human beings living on the surface. That's an understandable anxiety, but when you look at where you actually need to put your attention if you want to pursue the goal of human and environmental well-being, it's how did the well get constructed? How many precautions were taken? How careful has the construction of the casing been? And how successful have you been in constructing a well that separates the contents of the well from the surrounding rock or aquifers? That's the question to ask, and it gets particularly important as you get near the surface, further away from the fracturing site. So there is every good reason for society to be paying close attention to what's called wellbore integrity, the creation of a well that succeeds in keeping its contents isolated from the surrounding environment. That's where our attention needs to be. So just aiming, instead of having 1,000 not-so-focused worries, to say, this is where our attention should go, and if we put our attention and resources, money, into making sure that the wells are properly drilled, completed, and maintained, then we have a payoff. Then we have genuine gain. But just sort of free floating agitation over the fact that something is happening beneath the surface of the earth, that doesn't really advance the cause of human well-being as dramatically as some people think it might.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and our guest is Dr. Patty Limerick. She's faculty director and chair of the Board of the American West, and she delivers this evening's Harding Lecture at SDSU in Brookings. It's titled, A Fractured Society Confronts Hydraulic Fracturing, How Historical Perspective Makes a Current Dilemma Both Better and Worse. Dr. Limerick, I'm wondering about where some of this discussion might come off the rails. If part of that comes from just a natural distrust of oil companies when they're not always all that forthcoming in, for example, what chemicals they're using in hydraulic fracturing.
Right. I was fortunate to take, speaking of historical perspective, I was lucky to take a class in progressive era history when I was in graduate school. And that's one of the things that we learned there was in the late 19th century and the early 20th century, the public distrust of companies and corporations and monopolies was very great. And so it was not uncommon to see a kind of full-out battle in public rhetoric. And then a little bit behind the scenes, you could see companies, corporations saying, we have lost the trust of the public, and saying to progressive reformers, Theodore Roosevelt camp, you need to regulate us because we cannot regain public trust by simply declaring that people should trust us. So this is not the first time in American history where it has been in the interest of a industry to say, let's cut back on secrecy, because I don't think there's more fertile ground for distrust than secrecy. That's just an almost guaranteed way of making relationships with the public difficult, to say there are things you cannot know, but you should trust us anyway. So, for instance, in the state of Colorado now, the state does require disclosure of hydraulic fracturing fluid. It's sort of a twist that you have to say what is in your hydraulic fracturing fluid, but you do not need to give the recipe or what proportion of the different ingredients appears. But it is a big step to saying it does not help the industry, nor does it help the local communities to say you cannot know the contents of this. So I think we're watching a very interesting evolution right now in the state of Colorado. Three pretty big companies, Encana, Anadarko, and Noble, led in the last couple of months. They led the state in proposing more careful air quality regulations for oil and gas. So rather than industry fighting that, they collaborated with the Environmental Defense Fund and the governor's office to say, let's build public trust by increasing the stringency and intensity of the regulation. So that's happened with other industries who come to a recognition that some route back to trust, that route has to go through more public accountability and more willingness to go beyond just saying, we don't have problems, we've never had an accident, we've never had an accident of consequence that resulted in damage to groundwater. It's just to keep making those declarations, that's just not as efficient as saying we need to all work together on making sure that people know what's happening and have reason to trust rather than just responding to some declarations of trustworthiness.
What about the aspect of powerlessness when talking about fracking? I mean, there's people, you see these reports about people, their water is contaminated, and they say that no one is paying attention to their concerns. In fact, the Daily Show even had a segment on this very aspect of oil production just last week.
Oh, these are great questions, and well-informed and well-aimed. The powerlessness experience turns out to be very big in how we perceive and respond to risk. So in my locale in Boulder, Colorado, to get from Boulder to Denver, you have to drive on Route 36, and it's under construction. It's always under construction, and it's dangerous, and there's barriers up, and it's confusing. And that's risky. But people don't experience that as a scary and alarming risk as much because they're driving, because they think, I chose this. This is voluntary. I'm on this road. I'm going on an errand I want to go on. So if you have risk and you have a sense of powerlessness, you have a much heightened misery there. One great risk analysis guy, Peter Salmon, has said risk equals hazard plus distress, plus alarm, plus distress, plus powerlessness. So that is a huge factor. And that's, again, a good reason for groups to come out of their bunkers and work together because, for instance, you can have a very bad headache if you just feel overpowered and victimized. You can have health problems that are genuine. The stress can be very much a source of genuine physical trouble. You might think, and there may be a factor of that, that your illness comes from chemicals you're inhaling, from emissions from a well, and that's worth looking into. It's very important to look at air quality. But the stress of feeling that an industrial operation came into your neighborhood and imposed itself on you without your consent, especially if you do not own your subsurface rights, so you're getting no returns and no rewards from the development, that's an affliction. That's a genuine sense of being in trouble and being in a pickle and needing help. So I think that's a very interesting thing. What it's created is a really interesting case study in the adaptability of government, because who should respond to that? Should it be the federal government? Should it be the state government? Should it be the county government? Should it be the city government? That is really up in the air with some ballot initiatives and moratorium and bans and litigation that's ongoing now in Colorado. So really important to pay close attention to the experience of citizens and that sense of powerlessness you mentioned.
Now, the Center of the American West, as I mentioned, at the University of Colorado, has had the Fracking Sense public lecture since last year. Do you see that they've had any impact on the fracking discussion in your state?
That's a really good question. I will say that to be a university-based professor who is invited in and given a chance to talk about these issues in public, that is such a privilege that I can't say, and now I need to know that I have changed the world, because, in fact, I've really had so many interesting conversations, met so many people, had such a great time. But that question, am I changing the world, have these forums been useful? I believe they have been useful for certain in one bedrock way, that we have demonstrated 20 or more times that it is possible for this polarized, fractured society, for people who have very opposing views, to sit in a room and engage in an exploration together, that they can, in fact, manage their strong feelings and then hear things which then go in the hopper and are sometimes hard to take in. We've had, again, I think 22 lectures, and we've had people from industry, we've had people from community groups. All of them have been revealing, but it's just amazing. We're still going on this, and we're not at the bottom of it yet. It's so complicated. There's so many different dimensions to how we read evidence. Even when we have a study, how do we interpret the numbers? How, if we have a public health study and people find an association between some kind of health problem and proximity to a natural gas production site, that's association doesn't mean cause. It means that you saw two phenomena next to each other. You don't know one caused the other. So just how do we interpret studies and evidence? So I don't know when we'll end here. We might go on to eternity here with the Fracking Sense talks, because it's complicated. But we are from time to time trying to sum up what we've learned. And so you can see our lectures at the Center of the American West website, and you can also from time to time get statements from us about how it's adding up for us.
Now, as I understand it, this is a serious and, as you mentioned, polarizing issue, but you try to approach the fracking with a little bit of a sense of humor, at least?
Well, we do.
Yeah?
We do, and I my last name is Limerick, and so I do have a few limericks, one of which is autobiographical and describes what it's like if you try to be neutral on this subject. So here we go. If you try to be neutral on fracking, you're a quarterback set up for sacking. You can assert and declare that you're going to be fair, but you still won't escape frequent whacking.
So you found that you're still, even though you're trying to stay neutral, that there are still plenty of critics on both sides.
Yes. And that's, I feel, there are people, I'm 62 years old, there are people my age who are out doing crossword puzzles to try to keep their minds active and lively. I don't need to do crossword puzzles because I do what I think is the right thing. And sometimes I have done the right thing, and people validate that. Other times, when I had the governor of Colorado, who was seen as, he's a Democrat, he's seen as too much in favor of hydraulic fracturing and natural gas development. So I had him as my guest for an interview, and man, 450 people in the room, some of them very mad at the governor. Every brain cell I can muster is just on it, and had been for hours beforehand trying to anticipate that event. So I feel this has been a great run for me personally, and if it turns out to be helping American society, and I think it has, because the governor, we did have two protesters that I had to have escorted out because they weren't letting people listen, but that was a good evening. I got the out of this, though, is that I did get a few people writing letters to the editor afterwards saying that I had been too kind to the governor, that I had violated my neutrality by not asking him hard enough questions. So, okay, so I met with those people. They had useful criticisms. I took them to heart. I try to be better the next time.